It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. This program is live. It is the 29th day of May, 2023. It is Memorial Day. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I'm a little bit late for absolutely stupid reasons. But if you run over to HeadOn.live, even now, and pick out a screen name and a password, if you've never been there before, you can jump into the merry, wacky, zingy, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours of which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Yes, whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live and you do jump in, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Theo and Stephen New York and Squeaky and Ralphs and Anatole. Because I'm late. I'm well past the tardy bell. I'm probably going to get detention for this. But like I said, there were perfectly stupid reasons why the program is late. And if you are listening to the podcast, hey, y'all, please listen, like and subscribe, whatever platform you're listening on. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment wherever, you know, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Podbean, don't care, any of them. Just raises the visibility of the program a little bit more, and that's a big help. Okay, and so with that all having been said, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so we say thanks to our subscribers over the course of the weekend. This long holiday weekend. And so that means thank you ever so kindly to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. And thank you as well to Charlene in Rogues Island and Suan out in Arizona. Thank you. Thanks as well to I'm sorry, for some reason or another, I'm having a hard time. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program. Where does that leave us? That leaves us at, as of this day, $1,340 in the hole. And, well, so that means today, Friday, Thursday, and $140 of Wednesday. But we made a big leap on this past Friday on the front porch, and I wanted to mention this past Friday because apparently there is something wrong with the podcast file for Friday. I don't really know what's wrong, but I've been tinkering with it, and I've still had no luck, and so I'm gonna re-upload it again and see if that cures anything. The audio file seems to be fine, but something happened with the Podbean upload, and I don't necessarily know what it was. But we'll get, I'll get a girl on it, okay? I hope you all have had a very good Memorial Day weekend. This holiday, you know, this Remembrance Day. I like that term. You know, the British and the Canadians use, and the Australians, and I guess some other former colonial properties use Remembrance Day. Specific, because the number of people who confuse this holiday with Veterans Day never ceases to amaze me. Memorial Day is for the ones who never come home. The ones who were killed in action, engaging in self-sacrifice for the greater good. Veterans Day is in November. That's everybody who ever served in whatever capacity. But this is for the ones who didn't come home. And I've got two in particular that I keep on my mind on this day. One never came back from Belgium. The other one never came back from France. One on my mother's side, one on my father's. But yesterday was pleasant. By the way, we talked a little food porn. I got to do some tinkering around on the acorn because, well, there's problems. But I did manage to make some absolutely exquisite crab cakes yesterday. And Annette said they were the best I've ever made and the best she's ever had. So that was inspiring. Okay, so that gets most of the housekeeping out of the way. And that means we can get on toward the more serious business of, not really serious, but it's Moran Monday, y'all. And holy mackerel, it really, really is. And, of course, if we're talking about Moran Monday, and we're talking about full-on stupid, you know where we have to go and look. Of course. Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, where Rachel Campos Duffy unburdened herself of, some top-shelf moranity. That sickening old trope has been making the rounds again that Michelle Obama is really a dude. I wish I was kidding, but they just can't let go of that. Maggots are so gross. But Rachel Campos Duffy, this is not that. And just as a reminder, Rachel Campos Duffy got her start in TV on a reality show on MTV. And now she's sitting there on the couch between Brian Kilmeade and Steve Ducey. Go figure. It has a sort of natural flow to it, doesn't it?
If they've got hard evidence that they broke the laws, we'll finally see.
And a lot of Democrats mad at Joe Biden for having announced so early,
right,
before
exactly
this stuff came out. Listen, Susan Rice quit the week that Joe Biden announced. There's a lot going on. Get ready, because I have a prediction that Michelle Biden is going to step in here. Michelle Obama is going to step in to resolve the situation. I believe this is going to happen.
Well, and plus, she has that energy drink out, so it'll work good. 10 minutes after.
Oh, I just feel the brain cells dying left and right, don't you?
To the She's got the energy to do it.
Yes.
That's a big prediction.
A Fox News alert overnight.
Yeah, no. Michelle Obama, to say the very least, is not running for anything. But God, they have to have a bête noire, don't they? They have to have a boogie woman. And nothing strikes fear into the pasty-faced, doughy old bodies of the geriatric viewers of Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, like the name Obama. Because, see, it triggers whitelash. And it gets Emery and Marvelline there on their matching Barca loungers in the sitting there in their single wide in the Ballerina Swan Lake trailer park and country club. Oh, it gets them absolutely lathered up into a plum tizzy. She's gonna run. No. No, dum-dums. She isn't. Michelle Campos Duffy is married to, who was it, Sean Duffy? They were on, I think, weren't they both on Real World? At some point. Yeah. See, Steve in New York pointing out, I guess even Hillary is passé on Fox. Yeah. She's not half as scary as Michelle Obama because her name isn't Obama. And of course the name Obama strikes fear into every Republican heart because Barack beat their asses twice and made them like it. No matter how many racist cartoons they put up, no matter how many campaign ads with jungle drums on them that they ran, he still beat that ass. And they remember it. They remember it. So over the course of the weekend, it looks like maybe kind of sort of hopefully they've worked out a debt ceiling deal. Yeah, of course, I saw over the weekend that Chip Roy of Dribbling Dick, Texas, says he's going to blow it up. We can't do this. And I guess that means that the feed-em carcass is throwing a hissy. The weaker speaker is promising a vote on the bill, the Fiscal Responsibility Act. They'll vote on it on Wednesday, the 31st day of March. And then it needs to get through the Senate of the United States before June the 5th, lest we go into default. There may be enough austerity and shittiness in this to actually get Joe to the Manchin Bourne to support it. And Curtsy and Kirsten Sinema. I don't think, since it's a financial bill, I don't think it will require 60 votes. The best part of it is the fact that it puts this godforsaken debt ceiling business to bed until 2025. New Year's Day of 2025. and it takes it off the table, at least in theory, for the 2024 election cycle. There are spending caps that come with it. Ooh, look. In fiscal 2024, military spending is capped at only $886 billion. Non-military discretionary spending is capped at $704 billion. One could see that as a sort of clue about misguided priorities. There is a little bit more money in fiscal 2025. Pentagon spending goes to $895 billion, also known as $0.895 trillion, and non-military discretionary spending goes to $711 billion. One White House official trying to put a good face on it said, it's flat. It's a difference of about $1 billion. In a divided government, we're not going to get the kinds of non-defense discretionary increases that we would hope to get. The bottom line, though, is, you know, the maggots are trying to hold America hostage, and this is far from ideologically pure enough to satisfy the maggots, because they want America bleeding. And I think probably literally. And being more in Monday, we have a bit of an update on what was her name? Daley Salinas? That she's the woman who objected to The Hills We Climb by Amanda Gorman, the poem she read at the Biden inauguration, and got it yanked from some library shelves in the state of Florida. In particular, at the Bob Graham Educational Center. That's in Miami-Dade County. Questioned about why she objected to a poem like The Hills We Climb, she said, the books didn't support the curriculum. I'm not an expert, she said. I'm not a reader. Oh, God. This is so peak Morin Monday. I'm not a reader. I'm not a book person. I'm a mom involved in my children's education. I know this is nutty. But when you're not a book person and you're not a reader, I don't think you're particularly involved. I don't think you're particularly capable of being involved in your kids' education. Of course, remember, she also tweeted the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, so we know who she is. And of course, as book bans always do, the book ban is doing great things for Amanda Gorman. She has a collection of poems titled Call Us What We Carry. It's on the bestseller list. The Hill We Climb is an editor's pick. Amanda Gorman is pissed, but by the same token, Amanda Gorman's making some coin now. because a stupid maggot and Proud Boy and apparently Nazi-adjacent woman in South Florida brought attention to it. Even though, as Amanda Gorman pointed out, Daily Salinas said that her poem was written by, well, Oprah Winfrey. Not much of a reader. Meanwhile, the Miami-Dade mayor, Daniela Levine Cava, invited Amanda Gorman to come down there and read the poem in Miami-Dade County. The California school where Amanda Gorman once went, New Roads Elementary School, held a rally and a reading of the poem in honor of Amanda Gorman. They posted to Instagram, "When our students see this book, they are reminded that they too are authors, thinkers, speakers, social justice advocates, champions for those who have been marginalized, and compassionate young people who want to listen and to be heard." And now, because she's been unmasked, Daily Salinas is, "No, I'm not with the Proud Boys," even though there are pictures of her hanging out with the Proud Boys. "No, no, no, I'm not with Moms for Liberty." Sit, Liberty, sit. "Now, I just happen to go to the same kind of rallies they go to." Oh, God. One stupid, barely literate individual took a book away from God only knows how many children. Steve, I appreciate the spirit of your of what you're saying, but the maggots, Steve says, what they should do is buy up all the Amanda Gorman books and burn them. That'll show her. Well, right now they're spending all their money buying Bud Light and pouring it out, or shooting it with a fucking AK-47 or an AR-15. And they're going to Target and buying all the Pride stuff and burning that. And as mentioned, now they're mad at North Face. And that's going to be pricey to buy a bunch of North Face stuff and then blow it up in a Tannerite explosion after you shoot it with your AR-15. So they may be a little bit overextended. Not saying, just saying. And back to the debt ceiling, Steve asks, "Am I being Pollyanna? It strikes me that McCarthy will need the Democrats to pass this. I suspect that that will endanger Kevo's speakership. Is there any possibility that the Democrats did this to push the GOP into further chaos in the House, or am I giving the Democrats credit they don't deserve?" I don't think it's undeserved. I think that may be exactly what's going on. Hakeem Jeffries is no dum-dum. Remember, he held that caucus together through how many ballots for the weaker speaker to finally ascend to the speaker's chair and grab the gavel while the fee-dum carcass accepted his testicles in return, and they are now keeping them in Lauren Boebert's refrigerator. Or freezer. But yeah, there could be a full-on palace coup. And I'm kind of here for it. Aren't you? I mean, gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. There are some on the so-called extreme left of the Democratic Party, which is largely non-existent. There is no extreme left in the United States, hardly to speak of. And certainly not in the Congress of the United States. But there are some who might be less than thrilled and might even vote against it. But the thing is, the weaker speaker, six votes and he's not speaker anymore. The only problem for the maggots is they can't figure out who they would make speaker that other people would vote for. Marge, meanwhile, is trying to make noises with that hole in her head about supporting the deal. She said she supports it, and forgive me, I'm struggling here because it's marginal trailer queen, right? So that means you're going to have to sort through some stupid, probably wind up with a headache. Now, Marge said she's behind the debt deal because it claws back $400 million from a CDC fund that she said sends money overseas to countries like China.
China.
And I had no idea, otherwise I would have sent some thorns or something, but this was Marge's birthday weekend. Yeah, she turned 49 on Saturday. She went on to Twitter because she's trying to be a good soldier. She got a deal out of the weaker speaker for her vote. That's why she's making all those mouth noises in places like Homeland Security and government oversight. Herring asked Speaker McCarthy's soon-to-be-finalized agreement on the debt limit will claw back $400 million from the CDC Global Health Fund that sends money overseas to countries like China. Here's a few other countries that will no longer get access to these taxpayer dollars. Afghanistan, Albania, Armenia, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Burkina Faso, Burma, Cambodia, China. You know, this was a lot funnier when the Animaniacs did it. In fact, why not? There's never a bad reason to do this. And it always pops right up. I'm sure it will have an ad in front of it, because of course it does. But rather than read off marginal trailer queen's list of countries she hates, this is much more enjoyable.
And now, the nations of the world, brought to you by Yakko Warner.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador, too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still, Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica, Belize, Nicaragua, Bermuda, Bahamas, Tobago, San Juan, Paraguay, Uruguay, Suriname, and French Guiana, Barbados, and Guam. Norway and Sweden and Iceland and Finland and Germany now one piece. Switzerland, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Italy, Turkey and Greece. Poland, Romania, Scotland, Albania, Ireland, Russia, Oman, Bulgaria, Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Cyprus, Iraq and Iran. There's Syria, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, both Yemen, Kuwait and Bahrain. The Netherlands,
Where's Palestine? Then again, it's a little bit of this is the 90s, y'all. But it's still more accurate than anything marginal trailer queen has ever had come burbling and gurgling out of her mouth. Boy, there's a lot of countries that have people in it that she despises. And what's amazing is how many of them are brown or black. There's Rwanda. There's Uganda. I'm okay with not sending money to Uganda. No, I'm not laughing. It's so sad. So sad. But Marge wasn't done, and she said, also on the chopping block is nearly $1.5 billion from the CDC's Vaccine Distribution and Monitoring Program. Well, great. Because I don't want to be, like, panic-inducing or anything, but... There's a... another virus out there. It's, called the human metapneumovirus. HMPV. Great. More initials. And it's been gaining ground over the course of the cold weather months. You know, in this past winter, we had a shit ton of RSV. Flu went back up because people said, hey, we don't need our masks anymore. COVID-19 kept chugging right along. And then along comes HMPV, and it causes a hacking cough, a runny nose, sore throat, and a fever. It's an infection of the lower lungs. And lo and behold, maybe you heard this somewhere. I hadn't until, like, early this morning. It spiked this spring. Children and seniors were in intensive care units all over the country. And in the middle of March, fully 11% or almost 11% of tested specimens were positive for HMPV. Human metapneumovirus. God, we keep getting to learn all these wonderful new words. Yeah, but that 11% number was about 36%. Boy, you know, you can get lost in the percentages real quick. That was over a third higher than it usually is pre-pandemic. And by the way, I'm sure Marginal Trailer Queen will be happy to know this, because there's no vaccine for it. I had no idea, but apparently the science is out there that HMPV, human metapneumovirus, let's all say it together. It immiserated almost as many people this past year as the flu. And some people may have even just thought they had the flu. It is as common in hospitals as RSV and the flu among hospitalized older patients. And it can develop into fatal levels of pneumonia. And people have had it, gotten really sick, and thought, well, I'll be damned. I never got COVID, but well, here it is. No, there it wasn't. But again, Marge will be happy. Vaccine distribution and monitoring program is going to lose $1.5 billion. Because why would you want to distribute and monitor vaccines? Jesus. Meanwhile, Darlene in Connecticut says, bitch has issues with Albania. I'm part Albanian. Fuck off, marginal. From your mouth to her ear, Darlene. Palace Coup, Stephen New York says, don't get me wrong. If that happened, I'd buy the real popcorn and pop it with oil and everything and drench it in Kerrygold butter and Himalayan pink salt from New Jersey. Yes, Paramus. The Himalayan Pink Salt Company of Paramus, New Jersey. It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania? Yeah. Pink salt from, yeah. And meanwhile, I mentioned Marge having her birthday. That was nauseating enough for John in Central PA to write in. Subject line, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter turns 100 next year, so there's still hope for humanity, I guess. He will go down in history as very likely the most decent person ever to occupy that office. Oh, it is Monday, isn't it? Albania, says Steve. Why is the capital of New York receiving foreign aid? Probably because of Alexander Hamilton or something. So, Saturday evening, President Biden put out a statement late. The agreement represents a compromise, which means not everyone gets what they want. That's the responsibility of governing. And this agreement is good news for the American people because it prevents what could have been a catastrophic default and would have led to an economic recession, retirement accounts devastated, and millions of jobs lost. All true. I wonder how sits the speaker's crown on the weaker speaker's spineless noggin. Well, over on MSNBC, they called Kurt Bardella to talk about the future of the deal. And Kurt Bardella is ever aware that the maggots can and often try to do the worst possible thing.
You know, I think actually because of this deal coming right now, the expectation game has been well managed now, because the ball's really in Kevin McCarthy's court now. The pressure is on Kevin McCarthy to deliver the votes. If this thing falls apart now, it's going to be because of House Republicans, because of MAGA extremists successfully holding McCarthy hostage once again. And that they are the ones who will get the blame. We will be done with this both sides narrative that each side has something to lose, that this could blow back on the president. No. The president made the deal. The president did what he was elected to do, deliver deals for the American people that protects the most vulnerable among us. If this falls apart, if we default, if the economy craters, Kevin McCarthy is now the face of this deal. There's a reason why he was the one that was on camera tonight and not the president. So if this goes down because Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or any of those crazy cuckoo MAGA people decide to tank the U.S. economy, it is 100% going to be at the feet of the Republican Party and not the president.
He sounds right. Not that they will accept that responsibility, mind you. Crazy? Cuckoo? I guess you can't say batshit on MSNBC. But he's right. And you got to think it's not much fun being Kevers right now. And that's fine. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because they'll have to have some debate on Wednesday. So Wednesday might be a really good Congress watching day. That said, well, Congress doesn't come back until tomorrow from the long holiday weekend. So the Rules Committee will meet tomorrow at 3, and they will set up how the bill will be considered. On the House Rules Committee, there are 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Here's the fly in the ointment, the sand in the Vaseline. Both Representative Ralph Norman of South Carolina stan and Chip Roy of Gonorrhea Gulch, Texas, are members of the Feedum Carcass, and they're both on the Rules Committee. And if they decide to stage a palace coup, life gets really complicated really quickly for Kevers McCarthy. As it stands, if Chip Roy of Syphilis Springs, Texas, and Ralph Norman of Sokolstal. Well, if Thomas Massie of Kentucky joins up with those three, a Democrat would have to vote with the other Republicans in order to advance it out of the Rules Committee. And they may just want that to happen. The bottom line is that this bill will need 218 votes. If you think about Matt Gaetz, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, Andy Biggs, James Comer, those four would take it down to 218 Republicans, and we haven't even scratched the surface of crazy. So there may yet be some drama. The full House will get the, theoretically at least, will get the bill Wednesday evening. And then we get to see what happens. Now, the weaker speaker, with his silly putty spine, is trying to put on a brave face and say, oh, we'll pass it. We've got the votes. Hakeem Jeffries said there will be some kind of Democratic support once we have the ability to actually be fully briefed by the White House, but would not commit to any kind of a number of those who would, in fact, support the bill. McCarthy said he expects at least 150 members, House maggots, to support it. Yeah, I wonder. And the problem then is it goes to the Senate. Constitutional scholar Mike Lee of Utah is making brooga brooga noises, saying that he wants substantial spending and budgetary reforms. Meanwhile, Miss Lindsay, Lady G, who has been very butch this weekend, more on that in a moment, Lady G said he'll blow it up, too, because it's a catastrophe for defense. Yeah. 800 and... What did we say? 0.865 trillion dollars. That's a catastrophe for defense. But there it is. Our old nemesis, the filibuster. I was wrong. Yeah. The possibility of a filibuster exists, and that could push the whole affair out past June 5th. Now, that possibility is mitigated somewhat by virtue of the fact that the man who really runs the Senate of the United States, Moscow Mitch McConnell, issued a statement saying, the United States of America will not default on its debt. Today's agreement makes urgent progress toward preserving our nation's full faith and credit in a much-needed step toward getting its financial house in order. Now, I know that Steve in New York had a conniption the minute I said, read the words full faith and credit, because it has nothing to do with the debt. Not a damn thing. Not a little bit. Nothing. Tell that to the Senate minority later. So in the final analysis, the drop-dead date is a week from today. June the 5th. McConnell did say, I urge my caucus to act swiftly and pass this agreement without unnecessary delay. The question is did he really mean that, or was that entirely performative? And that part remains to be seen. But the feed-em carcass jackanapes are running their filthy gobs as hard as they can. Elise Stupidnik is trying to do her job and make it look like something it's not. This is a historic Republican victory. It will cut spending year over year. But that's about as good as it gets. Because, again, Ralph Norman, previously mentioned as being on the Rules Committee, said, it's insanity. There's virtually no cuts. And because he's a vulgar sack of shit, Chip Roy of Herpes Holler, Texas, said, this here is a turd sandwich. And then, of course, it just wouldn't be right if we didn't have a quote from Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. It has fake spending cuts. Well, it's either a cut or it's not a cut, Rand. I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off. It either has cuts or it doesn't. So they're, you know, they're making all the noises. Representing Dusty Johnson, a maggot from South Dakota, who is a full-grown man who still calls himself Dusty. He's part of what they call the Main Street carcass. Said, "Oh, there's no question about that. I've talked to dozens of members, and listen, not every single member's on board, but when was the last time every single member of Congress agreed on anything?" The Democrats are describing it as a huge loss for the hardcore maggots. That'll sting. And there is a little bit of nasty in there. Because, of course, we had to buy Joe to the Manchin Bourne support. And that support comes in the form of the Mountain Valley Pipeline, a climate change death funnel that runs right through my state, because of course it does. Stephen New York says, "I'm all for austerity and cuts for the military. Cut $400 billion from the military each of the next 5 years, but add $200 billion for education and health care over the next five. That's a net actual cut of $1 trillion. Don't confuse me with numbers, Steve. Representative Annie Custer, that's Custer with a K, she's a New Hampshire Democrat, said that, "I do not see it as a transformative change in government funding or the impact on the vast majority of the American people. For some people's lives, it will be very significant, but for most Americans, they will not notice." Yeah, one of the people whose lives, some of the people whose lives will be impacted significantly are anybody who has to live near that godforsaken nightmare, the Mountain Valley Pipeline. But, you know, they're just hillbillies, right? And they vote against their own interests anyway. Of course they do. Matt in San Francisco says, "Lifting the ceiling. I am so sick of hearing about this ceiling lift. I'm sick of having to appease the GOP and all their craziness. In a just world, every one of them would be voted out of office and remain out of power for the next 100 years. They are fundamentally incapable of functioning in a democratic society. They've burrowed their way into all levels of government. They have no desire to do anything positive or productive. I really don't understand why people keep voting for them and why everyone keeps treating them like they have valid points and are concerned about spending. I have no idea. It's as if no one's been paying attention to all their game playing over the last 40 years. They are exhausting." That they are. And they are, the ones who are, with a few notable exceptions, like whoever those people are who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings in California who send Kevin McCarthy to office, or Doug LaMalfa up where Sparky is. But the worst of them all come from the Confederacy. And it's the Confederacy. They're still doing Confederate stuff. They want the economy that was envisioned in the Confederate Constitution. All of it. And they're cruel. And they say cruel things that make their constituents happy. And so they go back again and again and again because they have conservative Southern family values. Got to say that way. Now, I mentioned earlier that we had had a Miss Lindsay sighting. And we did. Yeah, over the weekend, Lindsay got, like I said, all butch. Pretty sure Lindsay's never heard a shot fired in anger. He, you know, he went to the Air Force knife and fork school to learn who to salute, but he was a JAG lawyer. You know, Judge Advocate General. But Friday, Volodymyr Zelensky had a chat with Miss Lindsay. And Volodymyr Zelensky said to Lindsey Graham, "Now we are free." Of course, Mother Russia unleashed a hellish barrage on Kyiv. Because this weekend was their Independence Day celebration. And so having said to Miss Lindsay, "Now we are free," Miss Lindsay replied, "And the Russians are dying. It's the best money we've ever spent." Told you he was butch. And the whole thing was kind of a clipped together PR piece out of the presidential office of Ukraine. And boy, oh boy, did they have a shit hemorrhage back in Mother Muscovy. Dmitry Peskov was quoted, "It is difficult to imagine a greater shame for a country than having such senators. In Mother Russia, we would not have such senators. Such senators would take brief walk out window. His glorious Russian way." And then there was Russian Security Council Deputy Chairman Dmitry Medvedev. Wasn't he the one who went to the Republican National Committee? I bet he even rubbed elbows with Miss Lindsay back in 2016. Remember how the Russian delegation was the special guest of the Republican National Committee there in Cleveland? Dmitry Medvedev said, "Old fool Senator Lindsey Graham said that the United States has never spent money so successfully as on the murder of Russians. He shouldn't have done that." And, well, Miss Lindsay was just eating it all up. He does love that kind of PR. It makes him feel all tough and manly. "Come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation." Patient. And so, yeah, the Russians called on Ukraine to stop killing. Okay. call off your stupid war you started. Lindsay went on because he was feeling spicy and said, Ukraine has adopted the American mantra, live free or die. It's been a good investment by the United States to help liberate Ukraine from Russian war criminals. Mr. Medvedev, if you want Russians to stop dying in Ukraine, withdraw. Stop the invasion. Stop the war crimes. The truth is that you and Putin could care less about Russian soldiers. Oh, you tell them, Lindsay. Now, that was followed by a talking head on Russian state TV. They ran those same clips I just mentioned. And ordinary, everyday Russians are outraged, outraged. So over at RT, the head of that outfit, Margarita Simonian, said, if Lady Graham really said that the money for the killing of Russians is the best money the U.S. ever spent, I hope that in our country the sons or grandchildren of Sudoplatov are alive, his pupils, or the descendants of his pupils. It's not even hard. We have his address. The reference there to Sudoplatov, or a reference to a Soviet lieutenant general who was involved in the assassination of Leon Trotsky. Gosvaza Simonian said, I have no ill will towards anyone, and our religion tells us to forgive, but no one tells us to reward these types of things. When we don't act in response to these things, it is the same as encouraging them. It causes them to become increasingly more brazen. Then there was Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, who said, Senator Graham has something to compare with. One of their investments led to World War II and the Holocaust. And is she talking about Brown Brothers Harriman being the banker for, you know, that was George H. W. Bush's pappy, Prescott. Yeah. No, who was it? Who was the guy? He was known as Hitler's angel. Then there was Russian Security Council Deputy Chairman Medvedev again on Telegram, which of course is a Russian messaging platform. In his beloved America, not only ordinary people are regularly killed, but dirty money is also being spent on killing senators. You should recall the sad fate of Robert Kennedy, Huey Long, Clementa Carlos Pinckney, John Milton Elliott, Wayne Owens, and other American politicians. Wow, Abraham Lincoln didn't even rate a mention. Mighty nice of him, though, to mention dirty money in American politics, a bunch of which came from Mother Muscovy. You know, funneled through the National Rifle Association. Yes, yes. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, I hate to be caught agreeing with Miss Lindsay. But the fact of the matter is, those Wagner Group mercenaries who came from emptied out Siberian prisons, who are not the sons of loving middle class Moscow mamas. They've literally been used as bullet stoppers. 20,000 dead in the attempt to take Bakhmut. Yeah. But it is Memorial Day. Oh, by the way, we're in well into the second hour of the program. We came into it with $1,340 to go. It's actually more like $1,940 to go if you just count all the way to May 31st, but I'm trying not to think about that. But, well, anyway, $1,340 to go, and it would be great if we could take a bite out of that, because these last three, everything after the 28th of the month is a dry hole for subscribers because of the way PayPal subscriptions work. Ugh. And like and subscribe, please. That's cheap and easy and free when you're listening to the podcast. It is Memorial Day. And, of course, we do therefore have a compare and contrast moment today during Memorial Day remarks at Arlington National Cemetery. President Biden said, "Our troops have fought for our democracy and, if necessary, died for it." He laid a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. "Today, their service and sacrifice and that of their families echoes far beyond those silent stones out there." He talked about how he misses his son, Bo. "He didn't perish on the battlefield. It was cancer that stole him from us a year after being deployed. As it is for so many of you, the pain of his loss is with us every day, but it's particularly sharp on Memorial Day." Speaking further of those who never came home from our wars, he said, "Together, we're not just the fortunate inheritors of their legacy. We must be the keeper of their mission, the bearers of the flame of freedom." Okay, so that contrasts rather starkly with what Nitwit Nero did this morning. Fat little thumbs, phone keyboard, caps lock.
Mm-hmm. "Happy Memorial Day to all, but especially to those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for the country they love, and to those in line of a very different but equally dangerous fire, stopping the threats of the terrorists, misfits, and lunatic thugs who are working feverishly from within to overturn and destroy our once great country, which has never been in greater peril than it is right now. We must stop the communist, Marxist, and fascist pigs at every turn. Make America great again."
So it's the communists, the Marxists, and the fascist pigs. Donnie, I hate to break it to you, but your base are those fascist pigs you were ranting about. Oh wait, he was actually talking about the cops. He's mad at law enforcement for enforcing the law against him. Wowzer. (Clears
I'm so old, I can remember when Republicans used to have shit hemorrhages if they heard someone calling a police officer a pig. Oh, well. That was then. This is Trump. At any rate, though, thank you to Christopher. Christopher jumped in and said, ball rolling. Thank you. We are now not a goose egg. Thank you, Christopher. And we got 1330 to go. Meanwhile, Jude was out with the boots and flowers doing a stand in peace. And women standing will get us down to 1310. Thank you so much, Jude. It means perhaps more than you know. Fritz Thyssen, Hitler's angel. He was an industrialist. And he was one of those people who thought, I can control this, Hitler. No. And so he came over and did financial deals with an outfit called Brown Brothers Harriman, for whom Prescott Bush worked. And was, in fact, an executive. And which Brown Brothers Harriman got busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act in, I think, 1943. And that resulted in young George H.W. Bush having to zip off to flight training for the United States Navy, where he became the youngest U.S. Navy pilot at that point in time. Mostly they sent him on recon runs and photography missions because they really didn't want him carrying actual live ordnance. Hey, thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just jumped in, too, so we are now down to 1280. Thank you, Ralphs. Hopefully we can finish the month okay. How about today in today in terrorist attacks? It turns out that Stuart, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, Rhodes. And then he did. Bang! Head of the Oath Keepers, who is going to go do 18 years in the federal stir on a conviction for sedition. Now, before he was sentenced, he went off on a rant. And it was an ugly one. In an article over at The Atlantic by Juliette Kayyem, she notes that Judge Amit Mehta said, "You pose an ongoing threat and peril to our democracy and the fabric of this country." For 20 minutes, Stuart, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, Rhodes, bang! Pogo sticked up onto the cross and talked about what a victim he is. Among other things, he called himself an American Solzhenitsyn. He compared himself as the subject of Kafka's The Trial. Now, this is another place to mention. This is a proud son of the Ivy League, in point of fact, a proud son of Yale. I really do think that maybe Yale ought to take a deeper dive into their admissions practices. Ms. Kayyem went on to say, Rhodes also unwittingly revealed deepening fissures in the far-right movement that, 2 years ago, resorted to violence to keep Donald Trump in the White House. The defendant used some of his time to distance himself from the Proud Boys, another extremist organization, with whom he had met in the days before the insurrection. And going after the Proud Boys, she said, he was telling the world, I've been misunderstood. The Proud Boys are the ones you want. She said the rift in the right appears to be deepening. On January 6th, a variety of groups put aside their differences, but solidarity is difficult to sustain. As prosecutions continue and participants in the insurrection try to save themselves, divisions within the far right over ideology and strategy, as well as conflicts driven by pure ego, are reasserting themselves. Over time, mismanagement and general pettiness distract many extremist groups from their cause. Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State similarly devolved into, goodness me, interesting use of the term, catfights as they lost on battlefields. Rhodes, who imagines himself an intellectual, appears to feel tarnished by alliances with mere racists. That he would defend himself in court by complaining about the Proud Boys signals to would-be followers that he's self-absorbed, not that he's sacrificing himself for noble cause. An effective way to combat right-wing extremism is to put its leaders' selfishness on display. And with the last snarky note, she said, in the meantime, let the infighting continue. And there are still domestic terrorists in the justice pipeline. Holdovers from January 6, 2021. One of those people still in the pipeline is Ralph Joseph Calentano. And he's apparently going to trial. Dum-dum. Dum-dum. And his pettifoggers, Celentano, his pettifoggers have filed a motion in limine to block the prosecution from showing their client's T-shirt to the jury, or at least a photo. Because he's wearing the T-shirt in the photo. And the pettifoggers complain, well, hell! It's very clear this picture's taken in the kitchen of a home on an unknown date and time, and it is not a picture of Mr. Celentano at or near the Capitol. I mean, really, come on. But they're not saying that's not him in the picture. It is a picture of Mr. Celentano. It's just not on January 6th. Because, see, the maggots were so proud. Oh, so many of them had this T-shirt. They sold like, well, I guess hotcakes. And the pettifogger said, well, the picture's highly prejudicial, impermissible character evidence, and risks inflaming the emotions of jurors. Well, it's okay for jurors to get their emotions inflamed. These are not Vulcan juries. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. The reason they want to block it is because their client's wearing a T-shirt that says, Trump 2020,
fuck your feelings.
Yeah, that's you know, because feelings are bad. It's like these little shitbirds like Ben Shapiro and Matt Walsh. Ben Shapiro and Ben Dry Wife Shapiro, who particularly says,
facts over feelings.
Facts over feelings. That's all I'm saying is facts over feelings. Facts are more important than feelings. Feelings don't matter. It's facts over feelings. Because he talks really fast because he thinks that makes him sound smart. But yet, and so, deriding the horror of tens of millions of Americans at the accession of Nitwit Nero to the presidency, somehow,
fuck your feelings,
became a kind of a rallying cry for them.
Because, you know, feelings ain't manly. Fuck your feelings. And your pink hats. Fuck your feelings.
I always thought, and this is just a thought experiment, but for these assholes who preach facts over feelings, for those of you who have seen, and I know Scott alluded to it, I'm not done with it, I'm probably going to finish it up tonight, but for those of you who have seen over on HBO Max or Max or Max HBO or whatever the hell they're calling it now, for those of you who have seen the White House plumbers, it contains a very famous moment in which G. Gordon Liddy, in order to prove his loyalty and his toughness, would hold his hand over an open candle flame and just let his hand burn. And I think it's I think it's Woody Harrelson's E. Howard Hunt character who's describing it, and the person he's describing it who says, well, what's the trick? And he says, oh, there's no trick. Third degree burns every time. But if you were to take, say, Ben Dry Wife Shapiro, and you were able to force him to hold his hand over an open candle flame until it began to hurt, and it doesn't take long, and then you said, Ben, are you feeling facts right now? Are you feeling feelings? Are your feelings pretty important to you right now, Ben? Are your feelings telling you that you really need to take your hand from above this candle flame? Not feeling real logical right now, are you, Benny? No. So it's feelings over facts? Wow. You are burning. Facts over feelings would be done. But that's just more of that ultra-right-wing, hyper-masculine horseshit that they preach. And so, Mr. Celentano's lawyers don't want the jury to see him wearing a t-shirt that says, Trump 2020, fuck your feelings. Because maybe the jury, who aren't Vulcans, might be offended by that when you consider how much the January 6th domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States cost the United States in terms of blood and treasure. His pettifoggers also don't want the prosecutors to show the jurors a message that Celentano sent out in the aftermath of his participation in the aforementioned domestic terrorist attack. He messaged,
like Trump said, it was wild.
This particular asshole maggot insurrectionist terrorist took out a Capitol cop by tackling him from the blind side in what is being called a football-style tackle. Now, he's not facing anything like the sentence that Stuart, you'll shoot your eye out, Kid Rhodes, bang, got. He was arrested a little over a year ago. He hails from Broad Channel, New York City. And the cop that he tackled was actually an Iraq war veteran. Law enforcement caught up with him because of A, his easy pass, and B, the fact that he was ratted out by his on-again, off-again girlfriend. Gee, be nice if he went away for a while. Long while. Imagine having to submit the pleadings as a, you know, you went to law school, you studied hard, you've carried water for the senior partners and everything, and you finally get a client in a high-profile case, and the next thing you know, you're submitting the following language to the court. The defense moves to preclude the government from introducing Exhibit 1006, a picture of Mr. Celentano, wearing a T-shirt that says, Trump 2020, fuck your feelings. Might not be too late to be a piano player in a whorehouse. Not saying. Just, well, saying. Exactly. Classic case. Steve in New York. Come on. Let's you and him fight. When Nitwit Nero got up, Lee in New York says, rolled out of bed, maybe rolled off bed, went to potty for potty mouthing on social media, ate Wheaties cereal because he is a champion, saw the emails from his lawyers, went back to bed. Probably just any old day. And then over in the Washington Post, a little bit of a shocker. A piece on the opinion page, authored by two former governors of the state of Alabama. Democrat Don Siegelman, who was tormented by the Bush administration, and former Alabama Governor Robert Bentley, who had to resign from office when he, a good Southern Baptist deacon, got caught on a recording talking about how he couldn't wait to see, and I do believe these are the words he said, the titties of the woman that he was banging down at Gulf Shores, who was also a government employee or maybe a lobbyist of some sort. I think she was a government employee. And they'd been having a secret little tryst down at the Gulf. It's a romantic place. I mean, I've been there. It really is. And white baby powder sand, the beautiful, beautiful sunrises and sunsets. And if you're there at the right time of year, the monarch butterflies are in migration. When Annette and I were there, back in on November the 1st of 2021, they literally, the monarch butterflies, circled me. And it felt like a little message from the universe. It was beautiful. But, no, that's why. And then of course, his church up in Tuscaloosa de-deaconized him. But Robert Bentley is still a former governor of the state of Alabama, and so is Don Siegelman, who really should receive, well, it was federal charges, weren't they? I don't remember now. But they authored a piece on the op-ed pages of the Washington Post called referencing that the state of Alabama has more people on death row than any other state per capita. 167. And those two men said it's 146 people too many. So apparently there's 21 that are okay. They wrote, and this is a big reach, especially for a good Christian like Robert Bentley. As former Alabama governors, we have come over time to see the flaws in our nation's justice system and to view the state's death penalty laws in particular as legally and morally troubling. We both presided over executions while in office, but if we had known then what we know now about prosecutorial misconduct, we would have exercised our constitutional authority to commute death sentences to life. How did they not know? I mean, you're always glad when the prodigal son comes home, but how do they not know? Probably every brief filed in every case in which they signed off on the state-sponsored murder of some individual probably talked about the fundamental unjustness of the death penalty in the United States. Had we known then what we know now. Well, what they know now is what they went on to discuss in the piece. That according to the Death Penalty Information Center, for every 8.3 executions, one person has been exonerated. And that goes all the way back to 1976. So if you work the numbers a little bit harder, what that works out to is about 12% of the people who are murdered by the state in the name of their respective peoples and nation, about 12% didn't do it. In Alabama, what that means is that there are as many as 20 people who are sitting on death row right now, who didn't do it, who were wrongfully convicted and sentenced to death. Of course, it's hard to find Republicans who are anti-death penalty who are actually still in office. As of airtime this evening, Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw of Alabama has yet to stop executions in that state. They went on and wrote, "The center has found that wrongful convictions are overwhelmingly the product of police or prosecutorial misconduct, or the presentation of knowingly false testimony." A former chief judge of the Ninth Circuit, Alex Kaczynski, he's problematic. Even quoting him in this article is problematic, because he was a disgusting perv. One of his clerks, interestingly enough, was Brett Kavanaugh. He left the bench under a cloud of perviness. But But he said that withholding exculpatory evidence by prosecutors is epidemic in the United States. And the two governors went on to note that that kind of misconduct is in regard to black defendants 87% of the time. They cited a case in particular. In 1998, a non-unanimous jury recommended death for Tforest Johnson for the killing of an off-duty sheriff's deputy based on the testimony of someone who, unknown to the defense, was later paid a $5,000 reward. The case of Rocky Myers, convicted of murdering his neighbor, is even more disturbing. Myers was never connected to the murder scene, and even though the jury recommended life without parole, the judge overrode the recommendation and ordered his execution. Don Siegelman says he is haunted by the memory of Freddie Wright. He could have commuted his sentence in 2000, but he didn't. And at this point in time, a little too late for Mr. Wright. Don Siegelman says he is convinced that Freddie Wright was wrongfully charged, wrongfully prosecuted, and wrongfully convicted for a murder he didn't do. And I think it would be entirely wrong in the context of this story. Entirely wrong. Not to mention that fat, dead Tony Scalia, who's probably got an appointment or two with a pineapple in hell. Well, fat, dead Tony Scalia once infamously remarked that the Constitution does not provide any guarantee whatsoever against being wrongfully convicted and wrongfully executed by the state. Not making that up. That really did happen. And of course he said that because he's an originalist. Yeah, I mean, he was an originalist, you know, an originalist.
And our founding framers and founding fathers.
What's with the, why do I default to the gooey southern accent? Yeah, founding fathers, dear. Yeah, they didn't say nothing about you got a right to be found innocent if you're innocent. There ain't no finding of innocence in the Constitution of the United States of America. If a state wants to kill yous, the state can kill yous. And the Constitution's got nothing to say about it, and you ain't got no fucking rights. Because he was a great man. Interestingly, in 2020, shockingly, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties said that if you want to give somebody the death penalty, you've got to do so based upon a unanimous verdict. Because, see, in places like Alabama, the verdict need not be unanimous. The op-ed points out Alabama had been the only state to allow a person to be sentenced to death by this legal relic because it went back to the 1870s and was a function of the backlash against Reconstruction. And as 115 people scheduled to die based on non-unanimous jury verdicts, 115 people. That makes it all the more interesting that one of the signature accomplishments of Ron Monkey Up Duplantis over in Florida and his pet legislature this past session, or this session that's still underway. He's ever so proud of the fact that his pet Florida legislature ruled that the state of Florida can execute people on an 8-4 verdict. And in particular, there's a certain group of people that are targeted with that 8-4 verdict execution bill, but I won't mention who they are. I mentioned Uganda earlier. This is one of those will wonders never cease moments. Mirabile dictu. Of all people, today, Texas Junior Senator Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, spoke out against the new law that has taken effect in Uganda. I'm pretty sure Ron Monkey up DeKlantis would like to have one of these in Florida, too. New law in Uganda makes being gay a capital offense. Punishable by death. That's what a capital offense means. You can be murdered by the state in Uganda based upon whom you love and how. Well, like I said, lo and behold, and maybe because the memory of his daughter trying to kill herself because she's bi is fresh in his mind, I don't know, that's a bit much to hope for. But he went to Twitter, Rafaelito did, and he said, "This Uganda law is horrific and wrong. Any law criminalizing homosexuality or imposing the death penalty for aggravated homosexuality is grotesque and an abomination. All civilized nations should join together in condemning this human rights abuse." There's only one problem. The organizations pushing that law were not organic to Uganda. Countless dollars have flowed into Uganda from good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, tax-exempt, right-wing organizations. The same organizations that support Ted Cruz. Yeah. Well, let the sea lioning and whataboutism begin. One asshole replied to him and said, "Ted, seems to me your focus should be here at home working to get the unjustly punished J6 prisoners out of jail. I'm disappointed in you." Yeah, these are the kinds of people who think, you know, Stuart Rhodes was told, "No, you are not a political prisoner. You're not Alexander Solzhenitsyn, for God's sakes. And this trial has not been anything out of Kafka." But we talked about that earlier. Another maggot follower of Cruz said, "Oh, it's none of our business." And then a maggot called him a rhino. God, this some dude bro named J.D. Sharp responded and defended the Uganda gay genocide law. And said, "The law ensures Uganda reproduction rates will stay high." Because big brains, big, big brains. Oh, and I would be remiss, this being more in Monday and all, if I didn't bring another story to the table. By the way, we've entered the third hour of the program, and we are down to $1,280 on the fundraising goal. That means we've got $80 to go for last prayer meeting Wednesday. $80. It'd be great if we could get Wednesday wrapped up before this Tuesday. And honestly, I've got an appointment tomorrow that I have to pay cash for. And that sucks. These appointments. Now, I wanted to mention this one because, well, the stories write themselves. Do you remember the story from last summer where only by dumb luck, I think it was a hotel desk clerk in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, who noticed that there appeared to be a rental truck, you know, box truck, that was just full of angry white men. And thought it might be a good idea to contact local law enforcement, which he did. Well, the local law enforcement investigated, and it turned out they were all members of a group called Patriot Front. And the goal of Patriot Front had been to attack the Pride celebration that was scheduled for the next day there in Coeur d'Alene. And I don't mean they were going to carry protest signs and such. But no, they meant to hurt people. Fully prepared to kill people. And I remember the aftermath of that story was that these fascists, and they're fascists, they're white nationalists, to the extent that that euphemism is even helpful. They're fascists. They're Nazis. A Nazi by any other name would stink as Nazi. Well, they were all arrested. They were hauled off to the Hoosgow. And then some unknown benefactor paid bail for every last one of them. And then they disappeared. Well, one of the people who disappeared was Jared M. Boyce. And I don't mean disappeared as in, you know, I don't know what the funny thing is, I only see references to the fact that these Nazis were arrested. I don't see any information about their convictions. But they were primarily there in Coeur d'Alene to bark and grunt and howl and shriek and scream and hurt people, maybe kill people. All the while yelling, "Groomer! Groomer!" Accusing members of the LGBTQ community of being a threat to children. You know where this story's going, don't you? Because they always go there. Well, Jared M. Boyce, age 28, of Springville, Utah, entered a guilty plea last month in a court of competent jurisdiction in Utah. The plea he entered was to 9 felony counts. This has nothing to do with the Coeur d'Alene stuff, except that, well, it tangentially does. 9 felony counts. Of sexual exploitation of a minor. Also, one misdemeanor count of dealing in material harmful to a minor. He's looking at up to 30 years in prison. He will be sentenced tomorrow, Tuesday, the 30th of May, in Provo, Utah. It's kind of because he got busted in Coeur d'Alene with Patriot Front that this case caught up with him. A month after he was arrested in Idaho, the FBI, remember that's the FBI that Jim Shorts Jordan, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, is constantly having a conniption about, saying that they are weaponizing the law enforcement. Well, out in Utah, the FBI searched Jared Boyce's phone. Trigger warning. We'll take a minute here. If you need to step away, please do. God knows it does a number on me. When they searched Jared Boyce's phone, good Christian Jared is. Patriot Front's a Christian organization. When they searched his phone, the FBI found numerous images depicting children engaging in sexual activity. When queried by the FBI, he said, yeah, they're those are mine. I didn't know there was a Utah County, Utah, but he admitted to possessing them in Utah County. And he also admitted to sending a dick pic to a 16-year-old girl. The criminal conspiracy charge remains unadjudicated thus far in Kootenai County, Idaho. Kootenai. I always get that wrong. Only one of the six men charged in Idaho, a guy named Alexander Sissenstein, has resolved his Idaho case. He entered a guilty plea last November to one count of disturbing the peace. He got 2 years of unsupervised probation and a $500 fine. So he's good. And the probation's unsupervised, so he can keep on marching with the Patriot Front. Because, God, you know, we got a Nazi problem, but it's not that big of a Nazi problem. But once again, absolute proof that the groomers are the white Christian males. Not a shred of evidence that Jared M. Boyce, age 28, is anything but the straight man he is, and a sexual predator. And a groomer. And God alone knows how many of them there are in the wider world. But one of them got caught. Hooray. Now I wonder if Jim Jacket Off Jordan, because we know how Jared votes, don't we? I wonder if Jim Jacket Off Jordan will bark and groan and carry on. About the weaponization of the government, taking down poor Jared Boyce, when all he was doing was sending dick pics. And again, we're talking about Jim Jacket off Jordan, who, when people went to him at the Ohio State University, and by people I mean young men, and said, "Coach, Team Doctor's been fucking us." "Yeah, well, you know, I mean, wrestling's a tough sport. Rub some dirt on it. Walk it off." Sure. It's definitely Monday. Oh, by the way, last I checked, Levi's are still expensive. And so the Maggots are going to need more Tannerite, because they got some Levi's. They got to blow up their Levi's now. What did Levi's do? They made an ad with some gender non-conforming people in it, because the styles are unisex in this line. And one of the people in the ad's name is Jesus. Oh, no. Oh, dear. Dear me. One idiot immediately began having a condition. "Another woke company at Levi's. Levi's follows Bud Light and Adidas in woke propaganda campaigns. Make jeans, ignore jeans." J-E-A-N-S, G-E-N-S. Oh, how clever. "I will never wear a pair of Levi's again. Growing up, I had cords in every color they made." I did too. I like the thin pinwheel corduroys. Another person immediately, "Oh no, I'm a Levi's person and this ticks me off. I'm going to make my voice heard. Bye-bye, Levi's. I will never buy your overpriced jeans again. I hope you go the way of Budweiser and lose sales and stock value. The silent majority does not go along with this sick grooming bullshit." Now somebody tell her, or him, about Jared Boyce. I did. There was a little bit of pushback, though, one of which was cute. "Imagine telling a Republican 10 years ago that someday they'll have to boycott the NFL, Ford trucks, Harley Davidson's, Fox News, Disney, Budweiser, Levi's, M&M's, Nike, Sesame Street, Mr. Potato Head, Starbucks, Target, UPS, just to be obedient to the party." And it is possible to lose track. I lose track. Somebody else lost track. "Didn't y'all already boycott Levi's ages ago for something else? I don't remember the idiot reason why, but I do remember y'all doing it already. So basically, you're just announcing more of the same then, or is this a, well, this time we really mean it moment?" I'll be so glad when this spasm is over. Really, really glad. And because it is Moran Monday, it feels like this is an appropriate story. A Wyoming Republican woman has apparently awakened after a long nap. Her name is Susan Stubson. Now, Susan Stubson is a lawyer. She's also a Wyoming Republican. And last week, the New York Times published an op-ed that she wrote. She's part of a kind of political family. Her hubby ran against Liz Cheney for in the primary, trying to get to the U.S. House, of course. Harriet Haggis something or other won that with Nitwit Nero's blessing and support. I say that she has awakened after a long nap because Susan Stubson has just figured out that her beloved GOP has been taken over by a bunch of damn Nazis. I'm sorry, white nationalists. And so that's what the op-ed in the New York Times was about. She said her first interaction with white nationalism, white Christian nationalism. I don't know why the Christian part escapes these people when they refer to it. But she said she first saw it in 2016 when she was campaigning for her husband. No, really, at a monster truck rally. I mean, I guess that's where you go if you want some Republican votes. Loud, noisy, smelly. Yeah. She said that a man they saw there was wearing a cross around his neck and had a t-shirt on that said, God bless America. And looked at her and said, well, you know, I'll vote for your husband as long as he keeps the whichever group of people he most despises out of office. And then immediately went off, grumbling and burbling all of his hatred, all of his bigotry, all of his racism. And Susan Stubson wrote in the New York Times, I now understand the ugliness I heard was part of a current of Christian nationalism. Oh, she said it. Fomenting beneath the surface. And she said that white Christian nationalism has become so prevalent in Wyoming that she said, when I go to church on Sunday, I can't tell if I'm listening to a sermon or a stump speech. And the Wyoming legislature is chock-a-block with them. A noisy group unafraid to manipulate scripture for political gain under a banner of preserving a godly nation. Well, damn, where have we heard that before, huh? Kind of the history of Christianity, if you want to get right down to it. And she said that they've ruined the live and let live cowboy culture of Wyoming. And she said, and that's even in our state law that we're a live and let live cowboy culture. Okie doke. She said, God, guns, and Trump has become the new trinity in Wyoming. It makes for bad church and bad law. Ms. Dobson? I know it's going to be difficult to do, but I have a suggestion. If you don't want people to think you're one of them too, you better get out. Because, hon, it's not going to get any better. They own your party. Your party will have to be absolutely destroyed, burnt to the ground, and rebuilt if you ever want to have a Republican Party again. Because, yes, your party is overrun by white Christian nationalists, otherwise Nazis. But that's the whole Republican Party. Ms. Stubson, you don't have a Wyoming problem. You've got a Republican Party of the United States problem. And Republican Party Delinda Est Going to have to get all Cato the Elder on them. Make them unelectable. And then watch how much better America can be. But, you know, as her holy book says in James, faith without works is dead. And sometimes the works part is just walking away, because the Republican Party in the United States cannot be saved. Because far too much, too high a percentage, I dare say more than a majority, are just as bad. White Christian nationalists, Nazis, Klansmen, maggots. On a Venn diagram, it's just a circle. That's all. I mean, do you see any other alternative? Because I don't. They are who we knew they were. That's all there is to it. I've never seen a case of fascism just going away. And this is a day for remembering how hard and how bloody and how horrifying cleansing the world of fascists has ever truly been. Speaking of which, this story comes from the UK. Hi, Claire. At the Delawar Pavilion in Bexhill-on-Sea on the south coast of England, there has been a statue on display. It's a 10-foot-tall bronze. It is called Seated. The artist is Shabalala Self. And a couple of weeks ago, someone, we don't know who, defaced the statue. It's just a statue of a woman sitting. But somebody came along and spray painted the entirety of the statue's skin white. Because you see, the subject in the sculpture seated was a depiction of a black woman. Well, I mean, we caught that disease from them, the racism disease. White Europeans invented racism. We just implemented it with hateful and brutal efficiency. But there's a happy ending to the story. When word got out of the vandalism of the statue, a spokesperson for the pavilion said about 300 people showed up to help clean the statue and to get all the white off of it. And the pavilion even had to extend the hours so that everybody who wanted to come and help clean could. Shabalala self issued a statement. She said, "I am very disheartened that my sculpture Seated was targeted and attacked by vandals. Despite my disappointment, I am not surprised, as black female, and especially black female bodies, are often targets for abuse. Seated proudly represents the beauty of both blackness and femininity, and for these very reasons she has been harmed, covered by her assailant with white spray paint in a futile attempt to erase her color and, in my mind, her strength. I hope that the violence enacted on the sculpture illuminates the persistent issues plaguing the global West. Painting the skin of my sculpture white is an obscene act, and I feel horribly for individuals in Bexhill-on-Sea for whom this event may have shocked or frightened." So I guess yes, repugnant, revolting, repulsive, nauseating, disgusting racism. But 300 people proving that they're better than that. On the other hand, there's Oklahoma, Stan. Oh, dear. So the governor of Oklahoma is a maggot by the name of Kevin Stitt, and he claims some degree of indigenous heritage. The Oklahoma State House, when it found time apart from, you know, attacking women for being women, actually passed a bill that said that students in Oklahoma Stan who wish to wear indigenous regalia during high school and college graduations might do so. Traditional garments, jewelry, other adornments. The news story I'm looking at makes a point of saying things like bows and arrows and tomahawks and warhammers are specifically prohibited. But I bet they can bring a gun. Because, of course, because freedom, because Second Amendment. Well, here's the thing. Kevin Stitt vetoed that bill. He said it should be done on a tribal-by-tribal basis. And he's in his second term as Oklahoma Stan governor, and he has not gotten it all along at all well with the tribes. Yeah, because he's a shitbird maggot. I mean, I'm thinking that might have something to do with it. Just guessing? But,
he says, schools want to allow their students to wear tribal regalia at graduation, good on them. But if schools prefer for their students to wear only traditional white people caps and gowns,
I added the white people part,
the legislature shouldn't stand in their way. And now they're going. Now other groups are going to demand special favor to wear whatever they please at a formal ceremony.
And the Oklahoma legislature, without even batting an eyelash, overrode the hell out of his veto. This past Thursday, Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. Said, "I hope Governor Stitt hears the message that his blanket hostility to tribes is a dead end." The majority of Oklahomans believe in respecting the rights of Native Americans and working together with the sovereign tribes who share this land, who had that land stolen from them, who only wound up, some of whom only wound up in Oklahoma as a result of the Trail of Tears and were allowed to bring their enslaved African people with them, and for whom, for which aforementioned enslaved peoples, they were among the last to actually be freed. Never mind. Back in 2018, Cameron Yanchik, who is part of the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, was told that they could not, she could not wear a decorated cap with a bead pattern when she graduated from high school. She's gone on, gone to college. It's 2023. She's a Native American policy advocate now, and she said, being able to unapologetically express yourself and take pride in your culture at a celebration without having to ask a non-Native person for permission to do so is really significant. And some students have been forced to remove an eagle feather from their cap. There's an interesting potential conflict here. Because I confess, I read this and the first thing that came to mind was, wonder what's going to happen when a Cherokee Two-Spirit girl wants to wear a jingle dress to graduation. Because there's every possibility in the world that her people are not hostile to her existence. And that perhaps she would have already danced in a jingle dress. Those things are so beautiful. And the jingle is pure joy. Kevin Stitt will be sitting there. I told you! They're transing the Indians now! No, honey, the Indians... Well, never mind. Two-spirited people have been around longer than any of the white folks in Oklahoma. There were probably two-spirited people in North America back when the white folks' ancestors were still fighting with the buzzards over what the wolves didn't want. But, you know, that's just history and culture. And now we can't have any of that. In other indigenous news, about 3 years ago, in Marin County, California, five protesters toppled and spray-painted. This is another story about a statue. But this was a statue of a Catholic terrorist from centuries back, by name Junipero Serra. He's hailed by the Roman Catholic Church as having brought salvation to the heathens. It's amazing how many things they get away with under that rubric. Well, they were charged with felony vandalism, the indigenous peoples five. But now the charges have been reduced under a plea agreement. No longer felonies, they're misdemeanors. The defendants have to pay money to Holy Mother Church to repair or replace the statue of the terrorist. They have to do 50 hours of volunteer work. they have to apologize in writing in an official court record, and participate in an upcoming community meeting with historians to engage in meaningful dialogue about the issue. Plus, they have to stay off church property. Yeah, sorry. No, don't be coming to Jesus' house seeking forgiveness, you damn heathens. This all took place at Mission San Rafael Arcangel. Am I doing that right? In, hi Tom, sunny San Rafael. 80,000 people have signed a petition telling District Attorney Lori Frugoli to drop the charges against the Indigenous People 5. It all happened on Indigenous Peoples Day as a protest of the colonization of Native Americans. What did they do? They knocked the statue of the theocratic terrorist over, and they sprayed him red. Yeah, he's from the 1700s, and in fact, I think it was JP2. Who finished sanctifying him. And people who actually give a damn about Indigenous rights point out that, well, no, not exactly a saint. He was the point of the spear of an imperial conquest that enslaved Indigenous Americans throughout what was then Nueva España. And the Indigenous Peoples 5 called what they were doing restorative justice. And so District Attorney Lori Frugoli said, after a thorough case review by prosecutors and a long discussion among church members, community members, legal counsel for the defendants, and the defendants' participation in the restorative justice process, that they reached a resolution. She went on to say, while this issue has raised emotions because of the sensitivities around religion, community boundaries, and historic inequities, the fact is that a resolution through accountability has been reached through restorative justice, and that's a victory for this community. Well, to some, I guess. I mean, I think it would be great. You know, they're going to get their statue back or sandblast it or whatever you got to do to get the red paint off of it. Maybe 300 Catholics could show up and clean it like 300 people did there in the UK. Not the same. But, no, there are people who are butthurt. A man in a dress named San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore J. Corleone, very close to Cordiglione, 5 days ago said,
I'm disturbed but not surprised. You've given the signal that attacks on Catholic houses of worship may continue without serious legal consequence.
Oh, bullshit, man in a dress. They were not attacking your
Catholic house of worship.
They were voicing their protest over the aggrandizement of a fucking terrorist. Because this servant of the Prince of Peace got all positively tingly back in 2020 when they charged the Indigenous Peoples 5 with felonies.
It's a breakthrough moment for Catholics. Press charges to the full extent of the law.
You know, I'm pretty sure that's what the crowd was hollering back there in Jerusalem a couple of thousand years ago when they were screaming, crucify him, to the top of their freaking lungs. He also wanted the indigenous peoples five to be charged with hate crimes. And he said,
the point is, a felony crime was committed. The law does not allow people to trespass onto private property and destroy it.
Oh my goodness, that's one of the oldest debates in the entire history of the Catholic Church. Does the Catholic Church, servant of a man who barely owned what he wore in his sandals, have any business owning private property? Or maybe even not paying taxes. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, motherfucker.
The law does not allow people to trespass onto private property and destroy it, all the more so when the private property is a house of worship and the property being destroyed has sacred value to the members of the congregation.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there's something in their holy book about graven images, motherfucker. Actually, probably kitty fucker.
Acknowledging wrongdoing in a written statement is the first step in a restorative justice. A simple I'm sorry falls pitifully short of reparation for the harm that was done.
Yeah, it's amazing how Salvatore J. Corleone here puts on the victim suit so easily. The number of people tortured and killed, members of cultures far more significant and far more successful than anything those unbathed fucking Europeans, disease-bearing Europeans ever had. Well, I don't think you could probably begin to count the number of people that they killed in the name of Jesus. But Corleone and the Archbishop of Los Angeles, Jose Gomez, both clutched their pearls or their golden necklaces or sniffled into their lace hankies or whatever archbishops do. And they defended the hagiography of people like Junipero Serra, who spread untold misery. You know, it's funny how people can get along for 10, 12, 15,000 years and never even hear the name of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life and looked a lot more like them than the archbishop do, or Junipero Serra more particularly. It's amazing how they can build an entirely brilliant culture without having so much as a moment's need of Jesus. This is so gross. And of course, there is an effort that continues to compel the Catholic Church to finally fess up to their colonialism and to the cultures they personally destroyed. In the Valley of Mexico, they built a mountain of fawn-skin books and set them ablaze. In Peru, they destroyed quipus, which was such an esoteric and brilliant medium of expression that it may have been, and you know, it's textile based and it's all knots and which way the knots are tied and what direction and what color. Meaning was conveyed through color, through sensory perception, touch, through arrangement. It was so far above writing, we think, that it's almost inexpressible. And the same thing with the Aztec texts, Mexica texts. color conveyed meaning. It was readable language. But there weren't no Jesus in it, so they burned them. And in point of fact, and I think there is validity to this, people seeking, making anti-colonialist protest, noted that there's just not a hell of a lot of difference between a statue of Junipero Serra and a statue of, Stonewall Jackson. He was a Christian, too. When his staff came to him after a particularly bloody battle and in anticipation of another one, they remarked on the bravery of the Union soldiers and said, "What shall we do, General?" And Thomas James Jackson answered, because he was a Christian, "Kill them. Kill them all." I think the outcome of that case is actually far too harsh on the people who were protesting. Oh, well. It's who they are. And, by the way, we are at $12.80 for fundraising. $80 finishes off last Wednesday. That would be great. But, well, no. Maybe. It'll be what it'll be. Oh, and I guess this story maybe got a little bit missed as a result of, for instance, what happened with Covenant Christian School and the slaughter there. But it's always worth remembering that the cops are the biggest, most well-armed gang on the street. And so it was that the district attorney in Nashville, Tennessee, decided to give a pass to a cop. Who blew away a Grammy Award-winning producer. Actually, a recording engineer. It was another one of those mental health crisis kind of things. Happened at 3 o'clock in the morning. Cops showed up. At that point, by that time, the victim-to-be, Mark Capps, age 54, noted for his work in polka recordings and having won a Grammy for that. Yeah, he'd been in a bad way. He told the women that he threatened his 60-year-old wife and 23-year-old stepdaughter, held them at gunpoint, and then the 54-year-old fell asleep. His wife and his stepdaughter escaped with their pets and ran to the police at Hermitage, Tennessee. They swore out arrest and warrants and kidnapping warrants, all of which is perfectly reasonable. The 54-year-old had no public arrest history, There had been no calls of the cops to the home. So then the MNPD sent out the SWAT team to serve the warrants about 2 p.m. the following afternoon. He barricaded himself inside the home, came to the door, opened the door, had a gun in his hand, and then they wasted him. And so now the prosecuting attorney, Glenn Funk, has said that he will not pursue charges against Metro Nashville police officer Kendall Kuhn for blowing him away last January 5th. They said, lower your weapon, and then shot him. Just another day. On the other hand, and this will end the program, I think. There's Colorado. A young man named Christian Glass had called for help after he was in a car wreck. He was 22 years old. It was June of 2022. He was kind of freaking out in his car after the crash. Mental health crisis. Called 911. And the cops showed up and blew him away. And this isn't one of those no-one-will-be-charged kind of moments, either. Oh, no. Cops are expensive. Because the shoot-first-and-ask-questions-later attitude of the cop who responded to Christian Glass and murdered him for not getting out of the car, that really shouldn't be a capital offense in the United States. Well, it's going to cost the state of Colorado, and as well as the local folks, $19 million. The state of Colorado is going to pay it, as well as Clear Creek County, Colorado, the town of Georgetown, the city of Idaho Springs. And all they had to do was back away. Call for mental health help. Nope. Shoot first and ask questions later. They're going to honor his memory. There will be a dedicated crisis response team going forward in Clear Creek County to deal with mental health crises some other way than just blowing away the person in crisis. All of its patrol officers will now be trained in crisis intervention. Why they weren't in the first place is not answered in the story. They're going to dedicate a public park to the young man that their police murdered. And his parents, Simon and Sally Glass, will share their story with new patrol recruits at the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Office. The settlement also required each of the three local authorities to issue a written apology separately and state clearly that the young man's death was avoidable. His family's lawyer said Christian Glass should be alive today. This settlement sends a message that such injustice will not be tolerated and that those responsible will be held accountable. including those officers who stood by and failed to intervene to protect Christian. He crashed his car and freaked out because he'd crashed his car. He stayed in his car for an hour, and the cops argued with him, and he told them he was terrified. So that's when the cops moved in and tried to drag him out of the car. He picked up a knife, not an assegai, not a katana, not a Scottish claymore, a knife. And the cop then shot him 5 times. So it's one of the largest settlements it's the largest settlement in Colorado and one of the largest settlements in the history of this country. Because cops, like I said, are expensive. Okay, one last dumb thing. This one's out of Brazil. They had a beauty pageant there. And of course, there have to be winners and then first runners-up and second place or whatever. It's funny. I read the headline. It's like, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, South Carolina, Texas. Nope, Brazil. When the winner was announced, the second place... And you know, they were holding hands and stuff. And the woman who won second place, her husband rushed the stage, threw a tantrum. And tried to grab the crown before it was placed upon the winner's head, slammed it to the ground, grabbed the woman's hair, tried to drag her off the stage. And then he slammed the crown, picked the crown up and slammed it to the ground again. Actually kind of grateful that it isn't Alabama or West Virginia. Oh, the one and only cowbell of the evening. Ralph's. Genius. Where's my cowbell? Doggone it. Hate it when stuff gets moved around in here. Now, fortunately, we have the emergency cowbell. That's for you, Ralphs. No, I'm sorry. That's for Lee. Ralphs, I'm sorry. Lee, I'm sorry. Lee, this is your cowbell. Beauty pageant in Brazil. Wait for it. You know it's coming. Did George Santos enter? Oh, I should have seen that coming, but I'm glad you caught it. And thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend who got us done with last Wednesday. Whew. So now we're just Thursday, Friday, today. Tomorrow. Still haven't decided if I'm going to go down to Charleston on Wednesday. I was thinking about maybe getting some folks to call in from down there. Maybe give it a little wider notice. But we're done with Wednesday, thank you. And I can now afford my appointment tomorrow. Really appreciate it. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors, our anonymous friend, Ralphs, Jude, and Christopher, who got us started. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. You ought to tape an air tag to that cowbell, Randy Radar says. Why? This is my studio. Shit shouldn't get moved around. But it does. Thank God we had the emergency backup cowbell. Thank you, Roger, in Oregon, in the chat room this evening. Roger will not be here tomorrow because he's teaching the pickling class again, and I just love that. I love that. That would just be a fun class to attend. It's a long way. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.Live. Remember, please like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you take it. Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podcast Republic. I think we're on all of them. Please like and subscribe. Leave a comment. Share it on your social media. Never know when somebody will find the program and say, as so many do, this is amazing. I've never heard anything like this in my life. And they mean it in a good way. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And a proud union shop. Stay safe. Get your booster if you can. Yeah, pickled red bell peppers would be delicious. Randy Radar. Now, I can't think of much that's pickled that isn't. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots. They're a diseased lot. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance, please. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Kootenai, Kootenai, Kootenai. Sibilance, sibilance, sibilance. No, Kootenai. It ends in N-A-I. What am I supposed to do with that? And, of course, if... If the southern spork-footed rat comes towards you babbling about, we're not sending money to Albania anymore. Well, avoid her like the plague. You know, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. I hope you've had a thoughtful and pleasant holiday weekend. Later.